This is the...
I was trying to turn it on.
This is the regular session of the Mayor and Council of the City of Bisbee, County of Cochise, and State of Arizona, to be held on Tuesday, October 16th, at 2018, at 7 p.m. in the Cochise County Board of Supervisors Hearing Room, located at 1415 Melody Lane, Building G, Bisbee, Arizona. Ms. Coronado, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Anna Klein?
Here.
Councilmember Joan Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Frank Davis?
Here.
Mayor David M. Smith?
Here.
Councilmember Bill Higgins?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Douglas Dunn?
Here.
Councilmember Gabe Lindstrom?
Here.
City staff, Robert Smith, City Manager, Ashley Coronado, City Clerk, Carrie Bagley, Finance Director, Dwayne Wallace, Operations Manager, Alberto Chavez, Police Chief, George Castillo, Fire Chief, Britt Hansen, City Attorney.
Thank you, ma'am, and thank you, everybody, for being here. For our moment of silence, I'd like us to take a moment of silence for the family of Dr. Polanco, who passed away this morning. He was a member of the school board, and his dedication and service to Bisbee will certainly be missed. And so if we'd all take just a moment, please. Thank you. Please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. First, under proclamations, I do have a proclamation. And the proclamation is National Business Women's Week. In conjunction with the National Foundation of Business and Professional Women's Associations, and by the power vested in me, David M. Smith, Mayor of the City of Bisbee in the State of Arizona, I do hereby proclaim the week of October 15th through October 19th, 2018, to be declared and recognized as National Business Women's Week. In the City of Bisbee, and I urge our leaders of business, industry, education, and public affairs to join in the observance of the week by paying tribute to the many contributions made by all women in business and the professions. I do hereby set my hand and cause the great seal of the City of Bisbee to be affixed to this document, dated the 16th day of October, 2018. And Ms. Orozco? And we have Kathy Wright. And do we have anybody else from your... Thank you.
Yes, please say a word.
Well, thank you, Mayor and Council. This is a very bittersweet proclamation for us. For the last several decades, the person in this place taking the... receiving this proclamation was Laverne Williams, our Huggy Mayor and the president, the longtime member of Bisbee Business and Professional Women. We would also, on this evening, name the Women of Achievement and the Women of the Year. I think Joan Hanson up here was Woman of the Year a couple of years ago, and Kathy was last year, perhaps. Anyway, this year we've decided, instead of having that recognition, that we're going to recognize Laverne as our Woman of the Century. We'll have her recognition luncheon at Cafe Wilka on November 10th. You all are invited to attend as we recognize her long-term commitment to Bisbee business and professional women and to the City of Bisbee as our Hugging Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to announce, most people are aware that I'm pulling item number 7. The reasons for pulling item number 7 are that a detailed study is being done by Chief Castillo.
Excuse me, it's number 9, Mayor.
Number 9, thank you. I appreciate that. Can't read my own writing. Number 9, a detailed study is being done by Chief and the Fire Marshal regarding the hydrant placement. This is the fire hydrant placement between the Sky and Humphrey property. And I want to indicate, because the questions have been asked several times, just because it's been there for however many years it's been there, doesn't mean that it is there under the present fire codes and restrictions. Codes are changed on, in many cases, an annual basis, simply because there are new reasons for change. The second reason is that there are outstanding public public requests for documents, and that I believe specifically there's several on, if we have to unfortunately indicate that this situation has sides, that there are several outstanding on both sides, and that I feel that it is very important to have all data in so that all members of the council will be fully informed with all data available before any type of a resolution is brought forward. I believe that to do otherwise is not fair to either party and is contrary to providing a fair process by the council. And last, I will be calling for a special session of the council, which will be devoted entirely to this one project. And at that particular time, both, again, quote, sides will have the opportunity to address council and to provide the data that they feel is necessary. So that will be in the future when all of the public records requests have been answered and when the fire department has been able to provide a comprehensive review of the existing fire suppression systems. We have several members called to the public, and the first would be Mr. John Sky. Welcome, sir. Welcome, Mr. Sky.
Good evening. My name's John Sky, and I'm the owner and builder of 429D Laundry Hill. I'd just like to point out that the sale of the property was taken off the agenda for reasons that have nothing to do with the sale of city property. This item has been approved twice by the planning and zoning and now has been put on and taken off of the city council agenda twice due to outside political agendas. I have been dealing with this issue for over 7 months now. I've been bending over backwards to help the city. I've had an engineer inspect the house from footers to the roof to ease the tension of the threats of lawsuits. Why are the people threatening lawsuits being rewarded while I'm being attacked because of my past? Why was the fire chief told not to talk to me? I tried to get with him for weeks prior to this. He was told not to give me, basically I asked him to just give me the same thing in writing that he gave to the newspaper. Nothing more, nothing less. He was told not to do that. The other points that I'd like to make is, you know, I live here full time. I'm building here. I got a family here. I've been here all my life. I'm just trying to do what I need to do. This fire hydrant thing came up later. I've actually figured out many different avenues that we could do to solve that problem. I tried to get people up there. No one wants to go up there and talk to me about it. There's pre-existing fire hydrants. But the fact of the matter remains that the fire hydrant had nothing to do with the sale of city property. That's what was on the agenda, what was going to be on the agenda. There's no fire safety guarantee in Bisbee. So if you move the fire hydrant, what, are you going to put a guarantee on everybody's house that their house is going to be safe? Fire's been an issue here for ever since it was built. And then the other thing that I don't understand is the Humphreys have already said that they're going to sell and move, and then they want to sue the city due to the loss of how much their house is worth. And then you're talking about putting in a hydrant right next to their parking that's going to take away from their parking, just like it's going to take away from Rodney Smith's parking. What's that going to do to the how much their house is worth before they sell it? And then they're just going to use that against you later on when they file a lawsuit against the city. I'm trying to do everything I can to stop the lawsuit from the city, and I'm the only one that's getting backdoored on this deal.
Thank you, Mr. Sky.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Todd Conklin.
Mayor, Council.
Welcome, Mr. Conklin.
501 B. Bailey Hill. So I've been on the Hill for 38 years, and I just don't really understand why this was pulled from the agenda tonight. I think that this should have went forward as planned. There's a lot of disappointment. I feel that maybe things aren't being done. I think fairness is key in all this. So I don't think there's really much more that I can say here. Just that I hope that ulterior motives from neighbors doesn't influence what should be sold. Because if they're trying to say that the hydrant is the reason why this whole thing isn't proceeding, it's just it just doesn't seem right. That's all I got.
Thank you, sir. Moving on to general business, accounts payable.
I move that we pay accounts payable in the amount of $184,299.16.
Thank you. I'll second that. Do we have questions? Yes, ma'am.
Just for clarification, Mr. Wallace, on the Synergy Petroleum, I thought we were getting fuel from the county, or are we just getting their?
No, we're not at that point yet. The vehicles that we are leasing from the county, part of that leasing payment, that lease payment, is for the fuel from them. However, we still have diesel and lots of other vehicles and stuff that are not part of that county deal. So that's what pays for that Synergy Petroleum. I'm working on that as well with Ruben from the county. I'm just not there yet. Got a lot of different things in the air right now, and that's not my top priority as it is. So,
thank you, sir.
I'm just confused on that. Okay. And then one more question. How long are we going to require services from Rain for Rent?
Oh, it's done. And I'll explain that for the agenda item. I'll explain as much as I know about that whole thing.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Wells. Any other council member have questions? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion. Do we have a motion? I'd entertain a vote. Those in favor of the motion and second, which I seconded, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion passes unanimously. Item number 2, consent agenda. There's 3 items. Item A, approval of the resignation of Noah Subi for the Planning and Zoning Commission. B, approval of a park facility and right-of-way use permit for the use of Vista Park for Halloween base and movie in the park on Saturday, October 27, 2018, from 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. C, approval of a special event liquor license application submitted by the Bisbee Hospital Association for an event to be held at St. Stephen's Nemanja Church Hall, 216 Park Avenue, Bisbee, on Saturday, December 8, 2018, from 4 p.m. to 12 a.m., Robert Seaman, applicant. Do any member of the council wish any of these to be pulled for further discussion? Hearing none, do I have a motion?
I move that we approve the consent agenda items A, B, and C.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, sir. We have a motion. We have a second. Ms. Coronado?
Councilmember Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Davis?
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins?
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Dunn?
Aye.
Councilmember Lindstrom?
Aye.
Mayor Smith?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. It's catching up here. I'm sorry. I'm giving it to you guys. It's my fault. It's my fault. Long day. Sorry. Many phone calls. Okay. We have no old business. We have new business, however. Item number three, discussion and presentation on who Local First Arizona is, their work in Bisbee, and the recommendations made to council. Rachel Hudson, outreach. Welcome, Ms. Hudson.
So as you mentioned, my name is Rachel Hudson, and I'm the outreach coordinator for Local First Arizona in Cochise County. I presented before, but I just wanted to inform some people about our organization and some of our goals and outcomes, because my position has been here a little bit over a year now, and I'd like to show you what's come from that. So our history, in 2003, Kimber Landing started finding their Local First Arizona because she saw talent and money leaving the city, and she also saw a broken system where we favored corporations over local businesses. So from this, the Local First Arizona Business Coalition, or 501c6, came about, and this tried to promote advocacy for local businesses, so it got procurement policies to ensure that local Arizona businesses received different bids over out of state. They also have business connections, trying to connect business to business for sourcing, and also placemaking, connecting people to place and their homes. We realized that there were gaps from this. You can't just say buy local when there's issues in the system. And so our 501c3, our Local First Arizona Foundation, came about, and this focuses on the idea that Arizona's economy succeeds when everyone has opportunities to lead healthy and productive lives. So our programs from this is our Fuerza Local. It's a Hispanic business accelerator program and business membership. This takes primarily Spanish-speaking individuals through a course for business acceleration and shows them how to get credit, matches their savings, gives them fair interest rates, because a lot of times there's prejudiced lending rates from banks with minorities, and also helps them get the right amount of insurance that they need. We also wanted to focus on local foods to increase the healthiness of our communities. So we have the Good Food Finder, which allows you to find any sort of local food in the state of Arizona, completely free. Restaurants, bars, growers, producers, et cetera, it's all listed on there. And we also have a Farm to Chef connection every year, which focuses on connecting chefs and to our local producers to try and do more sourcing through that. And then the last part is our rural development. So this started with localizing supply chains, trying to do more of that business-to-business sourcing in the local communities, especially rural. So if you have a business, make sure you're purchasing from Bisbee office supplier WIST or hiring a local accountant within your community. We also have Science Happens Here, which is a science program for ages third grade through sixth grade, to get them excited about STEM in rural Arizona communities. It's a little competition, they collect rated cards. And we also have the Rural Policy Forum, which every year is hosted in different rural communities to bring together community leaders, nonprofits, any sort of person within the community who's interested in rural. And we've actually had representatives from Bisbee there for the past 3 years presenting and trying to promote rural development and collaboration. And finally, we have Weekend Zona. That is a weekend getaway that we do throughout different rural communities because $6 billion is spent by Arizonans every year traveling to California. And we try and redirect a portion of that back into our rural communities. We did one in July in Douglas that I ran, and it had 14 guests and raised or put directly into the Douglas economy about $5,000. And we have one secured for Bisbee to do, and we do that in the slow seasons to help compensate for the loss of tourism. So our mission is to seek, promote, and celebrate a vibrant, sustainable Arizona economy by educating citizens about local business ownership, social equity, cultural diversity, environmental kinship, and collaboration. And since we've come here, we've heard a lot. They're outsiders. They're from Phoenix. Why would we give our money to a nonprofit who isn't headquartered here? Well, we actually have offices all throughout the state because we're not focused on Phoenix. We're focused on uplifting the entire Arizona state. So our offices are in Phoenix, Tucson, Flagstaff, Cottonwood, Bisbee, and Globe, Miami. And the last three are all rural. Then our impact throughout the state from that has been the procurement policies for local businesses that I mentioned before. Science Happens Here, both in Safford and Cottonwood for the past 3 years. Weekend Zona throughout the state, Bisbee, Douglas, Globe, Miami, Verde Valley, Pine Top, Lakeside, which is directly impacting those communities from $2,000 to $10,000 going directly into those places. And we also have the Buy Local campaigns. I ran Independent Week in July, and we have Buy Local Month coming up. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. And those are going on in Bisbee, Globe, Miami, Cottonwood, Tucson, Flagstaff, Verde Valley, and we just started them in Casa Grande and Douglas. We also had a Fuerza Local program, which was moved down to Tucson. It was originally only in Phoenix. And we just had our first round of graduates, 12 graduates, which means we have 12 new minority-owned businesses in Tucson. So our work in Bisbee so far, it started in 2017 when iBisbee hired Local First Arizona for Kimber Lanning and Carolee Cox to conduct surveys throughout all of Bisbee. This was done by a list they received from iBisbee, and they pursued those people. And then when I came on, I started sending out online surveys, so we had a total of about 64. We hoped to have more, but between the names that we got and the people that would respond, that's what we ended up seeing. And the goal of these interviews was to determine, are local businesses capable of delivering a great experience to both locals and tourists? What do people think of Bisbee on the outside? What's the perception from the residents here? Do local businesses have resources and support they need to support increased tourism? And is their leadership in Bisbee capable of the kind of collaboration and strategy needed to become a thriving tourism destination? And I would like to address this last part, the thriving tourism destination, because I know a lot of people don't particularly love all the tourists coming here. But right now, we don't have the support from locals to sustain the businesses that's necessary. So until we see that local support to be able to maintain our downtown, we need tourists. We need that money to come in because we're not seeing it from our locals. So some of the outcomes and the four challenges that were identified were inconsistency. This is with messaging and marketing. This also goes along with the lack of collaboration. There's so many different organizations putting out different marketing efforts or different information instead of bringing all of those resources together to try and get the message out further. We also have economic leakage from local businesses, locals traveling to Tucson or Sierra Vista or shopping online or Amazon instead of supporting their local businesses. And there's a workforce gap. This comes from there not being enough higher level jobs, from people leaving high school or only a few amount of jobs, or substance abuse is what we identified. Then some of the recommendations included short-term, mid-term, and long-term goals. They included choosing an organization to funnel all of our calendar and community events, so there's one source. We talked about doing this through a high school program and trying to get a class where students could learn web development, marketing, design, and just have one place that wasn't a bias-ran thing where all people could go to get different events. We also recommended a citywide Buy Local campaign, which I've been doing here for the past year. You might have seen some of the We're Local, or Somos Local, or bookmarks. Some of the other ones included capacity workshops and develop overall strategies for business services such as plumbers, electricians, or carpenters to help them learn those skills within the pool of residents here. And you should all have a spreadsheet. It's color-coded. It tells you short-term, mid-term, long-term goals. Do you guys have any questions about any of those, or just wanted to see if anyone? We could address it at the end as well. Give you all some time to look over it and come back. So far, what I have done is doing Mythbuster campaigns. It's been going on for the past few months, where it shows cost-effective ways to shop local. There's this strong misconception that local is more expensive, and time again, I've been able to prove that that's not true. I did one for Starbucks versus Bisbee Coffee Company. Consistently, Bisbee Coffee Company was cheaper. B&D versus Lowe's. B&D was cheaper, except for a trowel, which was a dollar more. And then I'm doing one for Circle K versus Bisbee Beverage and Skyline Fuels, and for beer, gas, liquor, and wine. Skyline Fuels and Bisbee Beverage is cheaper across the board than Circle K. I've also been doing blog posts about Bisbee and our local options, and this has been shared on our website and in our social platforms, which reaches us over 150,000 people. I've also been sending out newsletters about some of our events, some of the community events that are going on, and I send out the first Wednesday of every month. And since I've been here, I started those in about January, and the list has grown from 21 to 225. I've also been holding Buy Local campaigns. Independence Week was in July. Buy Local Month, which will be coming up, and you should have a sheet on that as well. It's about consumers can bring a passport into a business that's participating, and if you spend money in that business, you mark it with a sticker, and then if you spend money in 5 stores or spend $150, you're entered into a raffle to win local gift cards or a grand prize. It's a great way to track local revenue, and in Verde Valley last year, it raised $17,000 in revenue for local businesses, and Flagstaff the year before, $30,000. So we're replicating that here this year. We also did our Buy Local outreach, where I've been going to libraries, different meetings with different organizations and groups to tell them why it's important to shop local. And we hosted a Be Local block party with Subway Underground in September, where we saw over 200 attendees, where they learned how to bank local, shop local, eat local. Cafe Roca donated food, and also drink local. Tombstone Brewery was selling some of their canned beers. And then I hold mixers. I've had 3 so far. The first one had about 80 attendees. And the last 2 have had around 60, and this encourages business-to-business local sourcing and also learning more about the organization. So these are some of the materials that have been presented by Local First, and then it's one of our mixers. So why does this matter? Small scale, it's money in the economy. So for every $100 spent in a locally owned business, 43 remains in the economy. When it's spent with a chain, it's only 13, and when it's spent with Amazon, it's even less. It also translates into jobs. Every $10 million in sales in the US, if you spend that with an independent retailer, 110 jobs are created and maintained, chains 50 jobs, and Amazon only 14. We're not the only people that found these results. The Cochise County Health Department did a countywide survey in 2017 and found similar results, with the good jobs and healthy economy being the most important factor that they, the citizens will believe will improve the quality of life in the community. So why have we asked for money or support from the city? Local First has actually invested nearly $30,000 into Bisbee through money for the survey and the VISTA program, which I am currently in. And by having the city pay into this, we're hoping to see an investment in advancing the work of building a better economy and collaborating within the community. Local First Arizona is prepared to invest $10,000 more for the proposal that you'll see in front of you, and has asked me to work on finding grants to help cover some of that as well. So far the money that has been spent by Bisbee through the economic development line item from iBisbee committee has been $800 to originally start the surveys, and then $397.25. That covered half the Buy Local materials that I showed you earlier. Local First paid the other half of that. And then the $6,500 was in 2018, and that was from iBisbee to complete the surveys and offer the reports. And the breakdown on February, iBisbee's portion of the interviews was $3,000. The total cost was $10,000. The $7,000 of that was covered by Local First. This includes travels, trips, lodging, all of that. Then in April, $2,500 for the initial recommendations and presentation that happened for council. And then in July, there was $1,000 for the workshop and second city council presentation. Again, lodging, trips for 2 people. Kimber mentioned that she offered to bill $350, but iBusy offered to compensate more because they knew how much the travel was costing. They also pay, Local First pays Carolee Cox $1,800 for her portion of the work and covered her travel and lodging through the money that was received from iBusy. Again, that's the economic development line item within the budget that's been there the past 2 years. It has gone down to $5,000 this year. So why Bisbee? Why are we here? We want to see Bisbee succeed. It's an awesome place. I've loved living here. And by supporting local businesses in these efforts, you increase the quality of life of the citizens, you support Bisbee's local economy, and you build a connection to place. So when people feel a connection to place, they're more likely to vote, more likely to volunteer, to give charitably, and to pay taxes. So how can you help build a better economy? If you support the Local First efforts to reduce inconsistency, economic leakage, the workforce gap, and lack of collaboration, and vote every day with your wallets. If you shift just 10% to local businesses, then it's been shown the local or the Self Institute of Self-Reliance did a study that if it's a city the size of Tucson shifted 10% of their spending, they had certain outcomes. I adjusted that to the size of Bisbee's population, and if that were to occur, there would be 800 new jobs created, $26.5 million in sales tax increase, and $65 million in total revenue. And it's not shifting or just spending 10%, it's shifting whatever you currently spend. So say you spend 20, go to 30, say you spend 80, go to 90. And then show up to conversations around policy that impact your economy. So this is further information, that is my email, contact me, you can subscribe to our newsletter that I mentioned that I send out. And we also have websites, Bisbee has a specific page, we have our Local First page and our Local First Arizona Foundation page.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Council questions of Ms. Hudson?
It's a lot of information.
It is.
Yeah.
Very short amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Been doing a lot.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. And we appreciate it. Hearing no questions, there may be, and we know how to get hold of you.
Thank you.
And so thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Item number four, discussion and possible approval of an application to APS for $5,000 in financial support for the Bisbee Science Lab, a project of the Science Exploration and Research Center to develop and evaluate through public engagement a series of bilingual science-based exhibits and experiences that will inform exhibit development for a permanent search. Council approval includes the submission of the application, the acceptance of an award if offered, and the expenditure of funds as defined in the application. Ms. Melanie Green.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. It's great to be up here again because we are moving at a brisk pace. So I expect that you'll be seeing a lot of us in the next few months. Our board met today to give its approval for the APS application that's before you. The APS has two different funding provisions. One is through their community giving program. That's out of their corporate offices, and there is a limit of $5,000 for those applications, and they're ongoing. They receive those at any time and make a decision within 40 days of receipt. So the deadline for their applications for this fiscal, their fiscal year is November 1st. So we're going to get it in for that period. We anticipate, though, also applying to their foundation at a later date where the maximum award amount is significantly higher. So we'll be talking with them again. We spoke with Mr. Richard Rosales, who's been on our advisory group for a couple of years now, who encouraged us to apply. So we're hopeful that he and his colleagues will look favorably on this application. The application, as mentioned, is for $5,000. In your packet, you have a budget where that $5,000 is in one of the APS categories for expenditure. We've selected curriculum development because it most defines what we want it for, which is exhibits. I do want to ask the council tonight, though, to allow me to make one change. I'd like to reduce that amount to $4,000 and add $1,000 under category F which is equipment purchase, rental, and maintenance. And the reason I'd like to move that is in taking possession of 24 Main Street as a new tenant, we have a $1,000 deposit that wasn't budgeted for through our USDA grant. So we'd like to use APS money for that deposit. So with permission to change that and your agreement to allow us to apply, that's the APS grant. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Questions, Council? There's no match involved from us.
No.
Hearing none?
I move to approve an application to APS Community Giving Program in the amount of $5,000 to accept an award if offered, an expenditure of funds award in support of the Bisbee Science Lab project of Science Exploration and Research Center.
Second.
And include the amendment that Ms. Green made.
Thank you.
You still second it? Yeah. All right. We have a motion and we have a second. Ms. Coronado, please.
Councilmember Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Davis?
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Dunn?
Aye.
Councilmember Lindstrom?
Aye.
Mayor Smith?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you once
Thank
again.
Thank you, Ms. Green. Item number five, discussion of possible direction of staff regarding the proposed sewer rate plan presented by Dan Jackson. Direction to include beginning the administrative and or legislative process necessary to adopt and implement the plan as proposed. Mr. Smith, City Manager.
Thank you, Council, Mayor. We had a work session earlier today on this item. Back in February of this year, we began discussions regarding the need to evaluate and create stable long-term rates for the sewer plant. In June of this year, Council directed Wildan to get the work done and create a fee schedule. Now, here in October, we brought him to make a presentation on his findings and suggest to Council the consideration of a rate table. Staff would like to move forward with the adoption of a rate schedule. There is a process. There were questions in the work session earlier today. We're happy to bring additional details and information if that's necessary. And we would request direction from Council.
What we're actually then providing, the request is to provide direction indicating that what we heard is what we want, as an example, we want you, the staff, to formulate, bring back to us for a vote.
Yes, sir.
All right. So at this particular point, perhaps it is proper to discuss the proposal was that there would be no sewer rate increase for 3 years, and that then afterwards, based on that table, the rate would be $3 for the first, I'm sorry, 3% for the first year, which would be now year four. And then there was, it varied between 3 and 2% after that. Some discussion that was had was, do we really want to do that, or do we want to perhaps next year put in a 1.5%? And then the next year, another 1.5% instead of waiting for 3 years for that 3% to kick in. So I'm trying to, am I capturing fairly what was said? Okay.
But does that really have to be part of the motion? Because I thought all we were really doing was saying that we're going to look at this and down the line, if that's what we want to do, then
Mr. Smith?
Council, if it's possible, we would like some direction to be able to create a new rate table if Council wants something different than what was presented today. So if there is consensus among the Council that it wants incremental increases year over year rather than holding the rate steady for a period of 3 years and then entertaining increases, we're happy to run that, create those numbers, and bring them back for Council action. at some point in time, we need to adopt a notice of intent to create the rate table and start the clock ticking on being able to implement those rates. So at this point, staff understands that there's a difference of concepts across the council in terms of how the rate table would be structured, and we'd like to provide instruction back to Mr. Jackson on how to adjust it so that it could be brought back to council for consideration.
Can we have more than just one? I mean, if there are,
we can run any number of scenarios.
Staff needs to look at it and says, well, you know, what about this? So that's why I'm saying, why do we really need to have it in the proposal?
Because we'll be voting on it when it comes back to us.
Well, but you're going to have more than one proposal.
And if that's what we ask staff to do, that's what we're discussing right now.
So if we want to look at a different proposal, we need to say we want to look at the...
We need to say, as an example...
No, I understand. So what I would like to amend it to say more than one proposal, because if the staff comes up with something, or somebody else comes up, you know, let's see what else is out there that we may not have gotten.
As I was indicating, perhaps one idea would be Mr. Jackson's proposal, and another idea would be requesting staff provide 1.5% next year and 1.5% the next year, which will provide us the data in front of us at that particular time to make a informed choice and a vote.
Between two, what I'm saying is there may be something on the side.
And it's up to us right now to tell them it's our direction to staff, not their direction to us.
I understand that, and I would like to direct the staff to take a look at both of those and see what they are. And then also, if there's any other ideas that they may have.
So basically, you're asking for another study?
No.
Oh, you would be.
No, I'm not. Yeah. I am not asking for...
All right, we're not. That's,
Mayor, if I might, maybe some basis for the original instruction to Mr. Jackson would be helpful moving forward. When staff brought him in and started working, our objective was to produce the least amount of change in the utility rates as possible for the longest period of time, yet still be reasonable when it came to an adjustment in the fourth or fifth year, because typically you'll see adjustments every fourth or fifth year. If the council wants to see that bubble, as was mentioned earlier, of 3%, 2% smoothed out, we could develop a rate table that is, as the mayor suggested, or as Doug suggested, 1.5% a year. We could look over the 10-year period and figure out exactly, based on projected costs, maybe what percentage of a fraction of an increase would be necessary year over year to have the same exact increase every single year. We need something to tell Mr. Jackson in terms of which numbers to run, and I'm sure he would run a number of scenarios for you if you want to look at those.
Yeah, because I'm just saying that 1.5%, I don't want to restrict it to certain percentages for those first 3 years or whatever, but, you know, what's based on what you just said, there's an option that he could come up with two or three different proposals.
And that...
Am I correct?
Well, and staff's looking for council to put a finer point on that. Whatever your policy objectives are for what your ratepayers are going to wind up paying. And do you want them paying a small amount every year as prices increase, or do you want to adjust it in larger increments, or do you want there to be several years where there's no increases? At the time this was being evaluated, there were a lot of things that still were unknown. We hadn't restructured the wastewater treatment plant finances yet, so we didn't exactly know where we were going to land. So we're happy to do whatever council would like for us.
I don't think that I'm coming across or getting across what I'm talking about.
If the city is able to break it down, I mean, I guess my question is, why couldn't we have broken it down before Wildan broke it down? You know?
Well, if you look at the proposal and you look at what Mr. Jackson went over today, there was a lot of complexity in the financial business of the wastewater treatment plant, its losses, the increasing operational costs, and the potential for restructuring our debt. And not knowing the answer to all of those things within our own finances, our own finance staffing, we needed to reach out to an expert who could do that. And I think it made sense to go to him. He was, I think, the original author of our rate plan when the plant was created.
Well, any direction that we provide back to you as far as 1%, 1.5%, or anything else is still going back to him for him to provide those figures to us. Staff is not sitting down with a calculator and doing it themselves.
He has a fairly complex financial
Correct.
Model.
Correct. So the point is, right now, our position is what direction are we providing to staff, asking them to do? And if I do believe it's a little too vague to say I want a multiple choices over I would like to take the original proposal, and I would like at least another choice of evening out that bump of 3%, then that provides the direction.
If that comes back and someone says, okay, well, I don't like 1.5%, I want, you know, this, can you have more than one option for smoothing it out?
I would, can you? Of course. You're interrupting. Okay, I was suggesting that it might be between staff, we're providing direction to staff, it would be between staff and him as to, if you want that bump evened out, as to how they believe it's the best way done to bring back to us. Mr. Higgins?
Yeah, my understanding was that how this is going to happen, there's going to have to be a notice of intent and there's going to have to be a public hearing. And
yes.
If I remember correctly, Mr. Jackson said that at that point there, you know, after the notice of intent and public hearing, that we could take input from the public.
Yes.
And they would be willing to work with us on that issue. And so my understanding, so there's a possibility, it's built in flexibility into the process. So my understanding is that what we are voting on now is to get the process started.
No, I understand that, but we're also putting in there another option. And what I'm saying is the more information that the public has at that public hearing, the better off we are.
I think there's only so many options you can, just can make out of that. And we've got one that he provided, and I think the one that Councilman Dunn talked about is a reasonable one, spreading that out over the 10-year period. That does make sense. Those are two viable options. And if you have another one in mind, then let's bring it up.
The proposal was get 3 years without paying anything.
We're not
arguing nor interrupting each other.
My understanding was that from the meeting we just left, my understanding was that, you know, his proposal was that we wouldn't pay anything more on the sewer rate until the fourth year. The first 3 years we pay nothing, no increase. The fourth year the sewer increase would kick in. Mr. Dunn's question was, instead of waiting for the 3 years to go by, if we started paying a smaller percentage right away, then when the fourth year kicks in, it would not be such a shock to our residents. And I think that was, but no, so it's, pay now, pay later.
I understand that.
Are you finished? Just a minute. Are you finished?
Yeah, I'm finished.
You may now.
Because I was interrupted. The thing is, you had specific numbers on that, and that's what I object to. because if you were talking about 1%, 1%, 1%, or 1.5%, we keep talking about that. And that's what I do not want to see, is coming up with, if there's more than one way to do that, that's the reason I'm talking about different proposals on that, or different options. Maybe proposal is wrong word.
Anybody else?
I actually understand what Joan is saying here. But
thank you.
Again,
somebody does.
I just feel like we're already higher than everybody else. What we learned in the state, we're quite a bit higher than a lot of people in the state already. And I feel like the first 3 years is only there with no payment because we said we weren't going to have a payment. We said we could possibly go lower or keep it the same. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this chart, the only reason it's like this is for that reason alone. Because when you look at it, it's jumping pretty high up, you know, in the next 5 and 6 years. So I feel like they just did the first 3 years just to kind of appease everybody. So I don't know.
So your suggestion is?
To reevaluate. I don't know. I mean, of course, I was against it to begin with. So it's kind of stuck in rock and hard place here because, you know, I felt like this was something we could have probably done within the city.
Right, and it was voted on differently, so now it's in front of us. So I'm asking what you would like to do with it.
I'm not sure. Recommendations.
Okay. Mr. Dunn, do you have something?
No, to move us forward, I'll make a motion that we...
We're not in a... This is discussion and...
Okay.
And
well, I thought you were between...
It's discussion and direction, so we just need to provide direction to city manager, Mr. Smith.
I'd offer some thoughts about the materiality of the increases we're talking about. 2-3% is like $1.50 a month. So it is an increase, it's a bubble, and it's more than 0%, but in terms of your average residential account, it's not a huge amount to increase 1 year over another. The original reason for establishing this schedule this way is because of the uncertainty at the time of knowing exactly where the finances in the wastewater enterprise were going to be. And so our initial effort at restructuring the debt and our initial effort at structuring this rate table was to present the least amount of stress to the citizens of Bisbee as possible and continue offering wastewater treatment services. So this schedule reflects that by offering no increases for 3 years and then about $1.40, $1.50 increase on the residential account after that. So we felt like we achieved the goal we were reaching for, but I don't know that that's consistent with the policy that council would like to have on utility.
I think that listening to the discussion here, perhaps staff would be able to encompass some of the wishes, and that perhaps trial balloon can be floated in which we can make sure that the individual members of the council's aim has been met in order to be brought to the public. Is that possible?
Well, in addition to the rate table that we have, one of the instructions to Mr. Jackson could be to run a model on the basis that every year in the rate table, the increase would be the same for the 10-year period.
Yes.
And we could create that same scenario that he spoke about earlier in the study session and bring that to council as well. If there's some other shift or direction council would like to give us, we would need further instruction.
Right. Ms. Hanson. This is to get it to the public.
Yeah, to get this out.
For their input.
And if you think of some other way you want to have it framed or the numbers displayed, then you can do that. But I think that we have those two two proposals before us and see how they look. I guess we get to move forward.
Right, and it allows us to provide it to the public to see what they think. They're the payers, sir.
Hey, Mayor, I don't mean to hang up the conversation, but there's one macro concept that maybe isn't universally understood. The rate table that's before you represents a dollar certain total cost for the entire 10-year period, and it reflects a dollar certain projected revenue over a 10-year period. How you spread it out is a matter of policy for council to decide how they want to do that. Our initial take was present the least amount of change possible for the longest point of time that's reasonable without presenting a material increase when we did have an increase. But we are certainly able to run the model on an incremental increase that's steady and the same year over year. If you want to front load it, we can front load it. It just, however you want to divide it up, we're happy to do that.
Okay. Any further discussion? Do we have any clear information to you?
Yes, sir.
All right. Item number 6, discussion of possible approval of emergency rental of a pump from Rain for Rent for the San Jose Wastewater Treatment Plant for a total cost of $11,856.41. Mr. Wallace, Operations Manager.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. In mid-August, we almost had a problem at the wastewater plant, so we used one of the emergency contractors, especially in a utility like wastewater and for a fire suppression system. We have certain contractors, whether it's KNG or, in this instance, Rain for Rent, because they have the pumps and the emergency pumps and the portable pumps to use. We had a problem at the plant. We had to rent the pump. We kept it for about a month. The good part is yes, we did rent the pump. You pay for it whether you use it or not. We didn't have to use it. I spent a lot of hours down there over the next week or two and was able to do some things at the plant, so we didn't have to use the pump. So as much as I don't like spending $12,000 almost on something that I didn't have to use, I'm glad I didn't have to use it.
Had we not had it and needed it, it would have been a lot more than $12,000.
Yes. If we had a problem with the digesters, had nothing to do with any material or equipment at all. It was a history of improper operation that we had to rectify. And I can say that now, as of this date, we have both digesters empty. By moving some personnel around and doing some different operational things. So we're in a little bit of a breathing room now.
Do we have a motion? Do we have any questions? I'm sorry, Mr. Wallace. Yes, ma'am?
I noticed that in the balance, it's a minus $6,000.
Yeah, I believe we paid, I believe, let me see, I guess, see there. Total. Oh, yes. The budget for wastewater that was proposed, there was a lot of things that were asked for that weren't required, that were kind of frivolous. And there were things that should have been budgeted with the correct line item that was not. So some of these, whether it's equipment repair or contract services or some of these other things, they were not budgeted the way they should have been. And I'm going to admit that was the former public works director's fault. He didn't correctly budget a lot of different things. And the next thing I'm going to talk about is the same instance. Overall in the budget, we have the money. And the
so you're just going to have to do the line item change.
And that's not even line item change. This, we're going negative, because that way next year, we will know what to correctly budget for that line item. And that's unfortunately been a history, instead of budgeting correctly for a line item, they zero out that line item and they move a little money something else.
You had indicated that you didn't have the money in that line item, but you had the money in the budget.
Yes, overall.
And so her question's valid. Where are you going to get it?
Probably operational expenses, use of reserves, you know. That's overall in the budget, you know, at the end of the year when you go, you know, in income and losses or expenses, it'll balance out. I'm hoping it'll balance out. Overall, line item? No. Next year we'll look at that line item and we'll actually make a correct assumption on the line
right.
item.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions?
Mayor?
Yes.
I'm sorry to jump in, Dwayne. You did a great job on that. There are some concepts that I think that are worthy of reminder to council and the public as we go through this process. We committed at the budget that personnel costs and associated EREs and benefits would be in a subsection in the departmental budgets, and they would not be fungible like consumables might be. And so while we are moving money in consumables and equipment costs, we will not be squeezing personnel lines to make up those differences. And we will be showing the exact activity that occurs in the department so everybody understands in the real world what's happening with our funds.
Great. Thank you. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the emergency rental of a pump from Rain for Rent for the San Jose Wastewater Treatment Plant. Total cost is $11,856.41.
Thank you. We have a motion and we have a second. All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Hearing none, motion passes unanimously. Thank you, sir. Item number 7. Discussion of possible approval of engineering services from the WLB group for the channel and roadway along Tombstone Canyon from Moon Canyon to Star Avenue. Mr. Wallace.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Let me preface this by saying we might have an issue with Tombstone Canyon Road and the drainage ditch, the Mule Gulch Channel. Tombstone Canyon Road has sunk and possibly sunk more over the past few months, and there's some cracking in the actual retaining wall alongside the channel. So I went to our engineering services. We pre-selected three engineers a few years ago, actually a couple years ago, and that contract is attached for engineering services, and I called them in to begin the study. This is the study for that. They're going to do a lot of hydrology, water flow. They've already began the survey to try to see what we can do to mitigate this, because there is a lot of utilities around the area. There's two water lines, a fire suppression line, a 4-inch gas main, a sewer line, cars, my house. it's actually funny. I've been staring at that thing sinking for a couple of years, but it didn't look like it sunk anymore until my neighbors across the street parked there, and then they're tilted a little bit more. So there's a possibility of a large issue. And instead of just doing a portion of the wall, I decided to have the full engineering report done from bridge to bridge, so that in the future, when we have when we go over and start repairing bridges, we have a good wall to tie onto. And with the proximity to the fire station, that's a very important. When the fire department leaves on a call anywhere other than Old Bisbee, they generally go up and around because there's less traffic. If something happens there to Tombstone Canyon, that's a public safety issue more than anything else. So I do recommend approval of this.
Do we have questions of Mr. Wells?
Yes,
ma'am.
Yes, let me, from Moon Canyon Bridge to Star Avenue Bridge. I'm gonna have that section because that's the section where this is. That way we can, some years ago, the wall next to the fire department had some issues and they braced it up.
Right.
There's a good potential we can do that here as well, but until they actually see why it sunk, we don't know what we can do to it yet.
And that's a distance of what, all of 200 feet or so?
Possibly, you know, no. A little under 200 feet.
Okay. Any other questions?
And the $17,000 is currently well within the budget of?
In streets. It's when overall in the budget streets. We have the cent sales tax that funds streets and infrastructure. Again, in the line item for contract services, I think it was only budgeted $5,000. However, we have money in the sales tax and overall in the budget to fund things. And this is, and heads up, this is not the only thing. There are two other retaining walls that are city-owned that need to be addressed that I'm going to be proceeding with soon.
Please make sure these would be to the Streets and Infrastructure Committee.
I've discussed it with them, but I can't wait for them to suggest whether or not to use it.
And this potentially could come out of HERF funds anyway.
Yes, yeah. As well.
So the funding is there. Any other questions? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the engineering services from the WLPB group for the channel and roadway along Tombstone Canyon from Moon Canyon to Star Avenue.
Thank you. We have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Hearing none, motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Item number 8, discussion of possible direction to the city attorney and, if necessary, Arizona Attorney General to review tapes of council meeting of October 2nd, 2018, agenda items 8 and 9, to determine whether there is evidence of nepotism and a conflict of interest on the part of councilperson Klein to financially benefit a family member of the Bisbee Firefighters Association Local 2146, of which he is an officer. Douglas Dunn, this is your item, but let me ask, we have two speakers first, sir, so I think it'd be appropriate to have them speak, if I may. That would be Joni Giacomino. Welcome, Ms. Giacomino.
Greetings. I was at that meeting when that was discussed, and I specifically asked if the firefighters were going to benefit from it, of which I was told no. Another person asked I asked if they were not going to benefit, if it was going to hurt them, take their hours away. Someone else asked if they were going to be able to apply for those jobs, at which point you said no, it's in violation of the Employment Act. So therefore, I'm a little confused here on the nepotism and how it's going to benefit a firefighter when neither one of those job descriptions that were voted on were going to actually help or hurt this person. Nepotism by ARA statute has an interesting definition that you might look at. One person is not going to benefit from that vote from last week. And if there was such a question, why wasn't the question asked at that time, like we do in school board meetings? Why wasn't legal counsel asked at that time if this person was overstepping their bounds and if this was actual nepotism or conflict of interest? I find it a little disturbing because now it makes me wonder if I was told and the public was told the truth about the reason why those part-time position job descriptions were voted on. I find it pretty insulting watching a council member be pretty much attacked and accused of something that didn't happen. It had been one thing if she was voting on pay, if she was voting on performance, if she was voting on promotion. If we want to look at perception, some people say, well, the perception, every one of the things that get voted on, there's perception linked to it. Chiricahua, when you guys voted on that, there's a perception of some of you that are associated with that. The Science Center, for that matter, there's a perception that some of you are as closely associated with that. So is that nepotism and is that conflict of interest? Again, I think before something like that is stated, the definition of nepotism and the definition of conflict of interest per Arizona state statute should have been looked at before it was publicly thrown out. And the council person, or not council person, but the legal person, probably should have been here tonight too, that was here at that meeting, the last meeting.
Thank you, ma'am. Lucci Giacomino. Welcome, Ms. Giacomino.
I think Ms. Giacomino
said a lot of things that I wanted to say. However, it says on this piece of paper that I have in my hand that they are going to direction to the city attorney, in parentheses, and if necessary, the Arizona Attorney General. That sounds like a threat to me, to review the tapes. There was nothing on those tapes that said that she was increasing pay for her son. That boy has been on that, and he is one hell of a firefighter and paramedic. I don't understand why, after all the years that she has served faithfully on this, I was on council for 12 years, and she had 2 years on me. She came before I did. And she's done one hell of a job. She does her paperwork. She looks out for the people in this town, not the firefighters, the people in this town. That's why her son's a firefighter. That's all I have to say.
Thank
but
you,
it
Ms.
really
Catherine.
Sounds like a threat to me, which is ludicrous.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Dunn.
Based on what's been said here, I feel it would be useful to clarify what constitutes conflict of interest, and also would benefit a discussion in terms of relationship, our relationship, council and mayor, with staff, city manager, department heads, and individual city employees, and would like to get my pardon me specifically would like to move that
we can't again I'm sorry sir we can't vote the agenda items discussion and direction unless I'm incorrect, Council.
Well, typically, discussion and possible direction means you just get a sense of the council whether they want you to do something or not, just like we did with Wildan. Technically, could you vote on it as a direction? Yeah, you could, but typically it's not done.
Okay. I'm confused because what I'm wanting to say, I'd like to request that we schedule a work session regarding conflict of interest and relationship between staff and city council members.
Okay.
And to clarify those two issues in terms of, I mean, it certainly has come up on other cases and some other council persons, and I think it's something in which we would benefit from clarification in terms of what constitutes conflict of interest. I think that certainly nepotism is an incorrect word, and I apologize for that. We've had legal clarification since then on that, and so I apologize for that. I do think, again, anyone can review what happened on those two agenda items, and I have left that meeting questions in terms of what constitutes a conflict of interest and what constitutes proper relationship between city council members and mayor with staff, city manager, department heads, and individual city employees.
All right, sir. Would you be satisfied with the fact that, as mayor, I indicate that I will, in fact, have a work session put together?
That was my objective.
All right. And if for some reason I fall down, then two of you can go together and have that done. All right. Ms. Klein.
Okay. So in state statute, Mr. Dunn, conflict of interest is defined as essentially what it says is that remote interest, well, I'm talking about remote or those that are substantial. Remote interests are so minor that they do not constitute illegal conflicts of interest. and that any interest which is not remote, as detailed in state law, is substantial. If you only have a remote interest in a matter before the council, then you can vote and participate in the discussion. And here's what law defines as a remote interest. And it lists, and then, but on number nine, a member of a trade, business, occupation, profession, or class of persons has no greater interest than the other members of that trade, business, occupation, profession, or class of persons. A class must consist of at least 10 members to qualify the interest as remote, which we have here.
Thank you, ma'am.
No, I'm not done.
Well, I will indicate that that's why we're having a work session put together for legal counsel to be able to, in a training session, do this for all of us rather than us doing it to each other.
Okay, and that, but that's fine. But this is a, I feel, a personal attack, and I want to respond, and I have every right to. So.
You actually have the right at the, that's fine.
I would not knowingly violate the city charter, state or federal laws that we swear to uphold when we take office, unlike some, which is why I double-checked with Ms. Orduño, city attorney, right before the start of the October 2nd, 7 p.m. regular session of the city council. She assured me I was okay and good to go. In my years as council member, I viewed asking questions as a way to clarify an issue for better understanding and for transparency. So I was a bit surprised when Bill Higgins emailed City Clerk Coronado, two city attorneys, the city manager, the mayor, and all city council the next morning. The message itself leads me to believe that this was discussed possibly among some council members beforehand. Shouldn't he have questioned it during the meeting? And if I was in violation, Ms. Orduño would have stated so and stopped me. Neither happened. Ms. Orduño answered by mail via Ms. Coronado, which read, Councilmember Higgins, we researched this issue ahead of last night's meeting and contacted attorney Christina Werther from the League of Cities and Towns for her opinion, which is below. Based on her opinion and our research, Councilmember Klein did not need to recuse herself from last night's vote. That was her legal opinion, of which I am covered by, and it should have been a non-issue at that point. Imagine my surprise when the potential agenda came out on Wednesday, October 10th, a week later, with Doug Dunn's request for discussion and possible direction to city attorney and, if necessary, Arizona Attorney General to review tapes of council meeting of October 2nd, 2018, agenda items 8 and 9 to determine whether there is evidence of nepotism and conflict of interest on the part of Councilperson Klein to financially benefit a family member and the Bisbee Firefighters Association Local 2146, of which he is an officer. And the fact that the mayor allowed it to be placed on the agenda after Ms. Orduño's reply to Mr. Higgins. Given all of this, I am of the opinion that this is a personal attack. Your animosity towards me is unprovoked, and contrary to your belief, I'm not as stupid as you look. Those who know me know that I am a by-the-book kind of person, and in spite of what the mayor spews in interviews, I do my research, as does Councilman Lindstrom. So believe it when I say I did look thoroughly at a possible conflict, and according to ARS, there is not one. I then sought the opinion of a retired Superior Court judge who confirmed the same. Our own city attorney also researched the issue and came to the same conclusion. In fact, in between the work session and the regular session on October 2nd, I double-checked yet again and was told I was good to go. If I was in violation, don't you think she would have spoke up and stopped me, as that is her job? Furthermore, I've never hidden the fact that I have a profound respect for the service and sacrifice of our public safety personnel, or the sacrifices that they make every single day, be they law enforcement officers or firefighters. I have held this belief all my life. It will not change today, tomorrow, or beyond. So yes, I will continue to support and fight for public safety. So in conclusion, your attempts to silence me, intimidate me, harass me, and humiliate me don't faze me in the least because I don't give two shakes as to what you think of me. But when you have the audacity to drag in employees and the union, that's where I draw the line. And having said that, I would move to forward Doug Dunn's complaint to the State Attorney General's office for a full investigation.
I second it.
Is that a proper motion, Council?
I'm sorry?
Is that, apparently Ms. Klein made a motion and it's been seconded. Is that a proper motion considering that the agenda item is discussion, possible direction?
I didn't hear the second to it. Okay.
Ms. Klein, would you repeat your motion?
Okay.
Just the motion, please.
I move to forward Doug Dunn's complaint to the State Attorney General's office for a full investigation.
Second.
Yeah, just realize that we can't guarantee that the AG's office will do anything with it. All we can do is forward it to them. And the second thing is we've been working through Christina Werther, the General Counsel of the League of Cities and Towns, on this. She is aware of the background. That might be another avenue too. But if that's the motion that's here, we'll and that's what's passed by the council, we'll follow it.
Right. I'm not questioning the motion. I'm just questioning the timing. I want to make sure that it is authorized under this item. That's all.
Yes, we would consider that direction. If the council approved that motion with at least four votes, we'd consider that our direction. So.
Sure. All right, we have a motion and we have a second to forward Mr. Dunn's complaint to the AG's office. Ms. Coronado.
Councilmember Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Davis?
Nay.
Councilmember Higgins?
Nay.
Mayor Pro Tem Dunn?
Nay.
Councilmember Lindstrom?
Aye.
Mayor Smith?
Nay. Motion fails 4-3. Item number 10, City Manager's Report.
Council, I have no report for this evening.
Thank you. Mr. Higgins.
I move that we adjourn.
Thank you. Do we have a second? We have a second. Those in favor of adjournment signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We stand adjourned.